Welcome to the Level Up Artist Podcast. We're your hosts, Adriana M.A. and
Jackie Sanders. We're two art professionals sharing for the advice and business lessons we've learned along our creative journeys.
We talk to artists, leaders, and art professionals to demystify the creative process and discover new ways to succeed as a career-minded artist.
If you find value in these conversations, please go ahead and subscribe. This will help other creatives like you find our podcast, and you'll be notified when we drop a new episode every Tuesday. On today's episode, we are so excited to welcome Alia Vermani. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We are looking forward to discussing your creative journey, moving from coast to coast, and your advice for teaching and facilitating art workshops, as well as recording a bonus segment on pursuing new artistic opportunities for our podcast supporters at levelupartist.com.
But before we get started, we'd like to share a little bit more about your background for listeners who may not be familiar with you or your work. So Alia is an artist, teacher, and independent curator. She was raised in a small town just south of Boston, where she spent most of her childhood enjoying the outdoors and discovering the natural history of the South Shore of Massachusetts. She received her BFA in 2000 from Laguna College of Art and Design in Laguna Beach, California. And this talented figurative painter has had several solo exhibitions, as well as her work featured in numerous solo exhibitions across the country. So the list is long, but just to give you all just a taste, her paintings and drawings have been showcased all over the United States and internationally, as far as California, Tennessee, Alaska, Arizona, of course, North Carolina, and as far off as Spain, and I'm sure beyond there too. She's a seasoned instructor who's taught at both the college and workshop level. She's been an honored guest lecturer at several universities, including ECU, Meredith, Laguna College of Art and Design, Texas A&M University as well. She is a member of the Portrait Society of America, as well as co-founder of the important blog Women Painting Women. Several articles have been written on her work in various periodicals, and the list is long, but a few of them include American Art Collector, Art Week, LA Weekly, and more. And she's currently working out of her studio at Anchor Light, which is down the road from us at ArtSpace in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina.
And so, of course, that is a very formal introduction with a whole list of accolades, but how would you describe your artwork to someone who's never seen it before?
All of that just tells me I'm old, that I've just been doing this an awfully long time. So for somebody who's never seen my work before, I think primarily I'm a figurative painter, and meaning both meanings of that word, both representationally, as well as I paint people, portraits. More recently, I've also started to break into sculpture with paper, so we can get into that later.
That is super exciting. Can't wait to see some of those. We'll have to pop by and we can discuss that later, the open sessions. And yeah, we'll definitely dive into that. But before we dive in, I want to say, I believe that the first time we met you was probably during an Anchor Light open house. And it was probably right before the pandemic. Maybe we didn't talk, but it was one of the first ones when things started to open up, where I was like, well, we have a podcast and we'll have to circle back at some point, but we'd love to have you. And at the time, we weren't interviewing anybody yet. So we were trying to still figure that out, but we definitely had you on the list. So, and then of course, we've crossed paths on First Friday, like either, you know, you're coming to the First Fridays, or maybe you're at CMAC and we're just like bumping into each other. I don't know. This is, as they call it, our art scene. So it's kind of tight, smally, I've heard it called. So we definitely bump into each other.
Yeah, you definitely made an impression when you came by our Anchor Light open house. So yeah, of course, I remember. That was wonderful.
And of course, as we've talked about, I mean, from the day-to-day local Raleigh art scene to your extensive resume and experience, you have definitely had a range of experiences, but I am curious, when did you first realize that you want to pursue a career in art and art education?
So when I was in high school, I was a professional ballerina. I danced with Boston Ballet. So I always thought my brother was going to be the visual artist. But when I went off to college, I double majored in between dance and art, and quickly realized they were both too demanding and had to choose one. So I took a year off and figured all that out and found Laguna College of Art and Design and moved out there. So it was that early just investment in my education that's when I really saw myself as becoming an artist.
Nice. That's interesting. We get the full range of answers, of course. Some folks are like, ever since I was a child. And then we get the ones of, I detoured into a lot of other things before finding it. But interesting, you started with the dance part. Well, that actually leads me into the next question. Have you always been attracted to figurative work? And what do you find most appealing about it? And I'm going to insert a third question in there. It's like, does it have anything to do with dance?
Yeah, it has a lot. It does. Yeah, the human body is fascinating to me, both, you know, feeling my own through dance and the expressions that you can have as a human body in paintings or dance form. But also, I would say both of my parents being medical professors and growing up in a gross lab and being able to witness cadavers being cut open and you know, see how muscles actually work was also fascinating and informative to me as an artist, as a figurative artist.
That's so interesting. I'm sure, especially, I mean, growing up with those influences, we talk with so many artists about, I mean, the various parent influences in your creative development. So I'm sure also growing up with posters, and I'm sure they have 3D sculptures of figures in their offices, that's just surrounding your young mind of looking at artwork in that way. That's so interesting.
Yeah, some of the best anatomy books are the ones my dad has given me. Yeah.
Now I'm curious, from their perspective, were they always, of course, with you and your brother being so creative and them being, of course, medical professionals, what was their experience with, I mean, supporting you guys in your art? Were they always super supportive of it?
My brother ended up not pursuing it. And in some ways, I think that freed my mental space up to say, okay, I can own this. But no, they were not supportive. My parents, my mom especially, just really did not think that it was a viable career and said, well, you're going to be a waitress the rest of your life. And I had to just be firm in my decisions and say, well, I'll be a happy waitress because I'll be able to still be an artist. So it's, I also, she did not help me pay for my education. If I had gone through the science route, she would have paid, but she didn't support me at all financially. And so I really had to own every choice I made. And that was, I actually think of that as a gift that she gave me.
Yeah, wow, that's absolutely so crazy.
Yeah, and it's awesome you stayed strong, because at least in my case, it was business school or art school. And business school, they were paying, and I went with business school, which I'm glad it still worked out in the end versus, I don't know if it was something completely unrelated, but that is amazing. Is there, dare I ask, is there a cultural aspect to this? Because in my case, I am from Hispanic culture, and to them, art is not a viable career, at least in my cultural experience.
I think it's, if you consider academia a culture, then yes, but not necessarily from my mother's American Swedish mutt, and my dad is Iraqi, and he left Iraq to come study medicine. So I don't think that there was any ethnic cultural pressure, but academia snobbery, absolutely.
That's a culture in itself for sure. Yeah. And now, I mean, before we keep going with this conversation, I would love to take the time to, there's so many listeners, I'm sure. We have a whole range of artists, art professionals from middle school and high school age all the way up to 70, 80 years old, all over the world. And so, what advice would you have for young creatives or students who may be in that position, where maybe their parents are not supportive and they're thinking about majoring in art? Because I know that's such a pivotal point for so many people. And as someone who clearly has made decisions and taken your path, what advice would you have for those young creatives?
Oh, it's so hard because school is so much more expensive than it was for me at the time. I was able to get grants and scholarships that made my tuition affordable working a part-time job. I don't know if that's possible anymore. So it is going to have to be a personal juggle for each individual. But trust your gut. I think there are instincts within us and futures to be had. So trust your gut.
That's perfect. And we'll circle back to the idea. We've had this with several of our guests, the idea of making your own art degree or equivalent. And being that you teach workshops, we'll definitely come back to this. But before we do, so grew up in Massachusetts, went to art school in California. You've been working in North Carolina for at least a decade, if my CV math works out right. Have these geographical moves changed your work in any way?
Yeah, for sure. So growing up in Massachusetts, I think that in those formative years, I think that kind of set in the bedrock of my body, kind of my color palette. So I love grays. But then moving out to California, Southern California specifically, there's so many plein air painters that love the pinks and greens and blues. And then getting that amazing education at Laguna College of Art and Design, which was completely, for me, focused on classical figurative education. I really built my career out in California first. I spent 15 years out in California, had my first exhibitions there and gallery representation. And then in December of 2008, so I think maybe more than a decade, I don't want to do math on the fly either. But we moved out here to North Carolina, and it was my husband is also an artist, and he had an opportunity to move out here with a video game company that was opening up a second studio. And it made sense for our children and cost of living and all of that. But I took for granted the amazing support and figurative community that I had in California and thought it would be anywhere that I went. And it really wasn't here in Raleigh at all at that time. The fact that I was painting nudes was a shock in the South. I had a really hard time adjusting to the people and wanting to even paint them here. So for the first exhibition that I had here, it was called Southern Weeds. And it was actually at ArtSpace, where I had painted the plants that had just popped up in my backyard and had become it became so exciting to see so much green again. California was pretty brown. And so that first spring, I was so excited and painted the indigenous plants and did historical research on how they were used and started to connect to the people through the history of these plants and started to bloom where I was planted.
I think that's great, especially when thinking about, I think a lot of people in other professions think like, oh, like if you're a doctor, so to speak, you move from one hospital to a hospital on the other side of the country and things are pretty standardized. When you get into some of the scientists, maybe the landscape of a scientist may be a little bit different in the desert versus on the coast, but overall, like what you're taught is pretty similar. But I think that's an interesting point to bring up about being an artist and needing that support from your local community of like, you're making the same paintings, but your subject matter may be accepted or received very differently based on communities. And I think that's an interesting observation shifting, of course, making a huge life shift, but then also kind of rocking your creative practice a little bit too.
And it really forced me to build the community I wanted too, which is how I got here to Alia Fine Art Studios. We can get to that part too.
Yeah. Yeah, I am curious for building that community. I mean, how did that begin? Where was the foundation of that? Like you shifted your style, and then what did you do to then build that community?
Well, so when I was in college, I started teaching in their continuing ed program. And then when I graduated, they immediately wanted me to teach in their foundation level. So I was teaching freshmen at Laguna College of Art and Design, drawing and painting. And it was wonderful. I didn't have my MFA yet. I still don't have my MFA. So when I came to North Carolina, that not having my MFA was a big stumbling block to getting those teaching positions. And so I had to start, you know, poking my head in different places and trying to get opportunities to teach in other venues, and slowly built up a following of students and taught at various small, large and small institutions across North Carolina. And then finally decided, all right, in 2017, I got this space, not this current space, but another space at Anchor Light, and thought, okay, this is a more public space that I can open the doors for a more consistent teaching practice, which is Ollie at Fine Art Studios.
That's amazing. Alia, what is your favorite part about teaching and your least favorite?
No matter the age of the student that I have in front of me, the aha moments are just the best. I literally do happy dances behind my students. I can just see like the connections being made and the sparks flying. And that is quite literally my happiest moments. And then running my own business, the administrative tasks are the worst. That just email, all the, you know, the basic stuff that should be easy, but takes time away from painting or teaching. That's like my least favorite.
That is awesome. Now, this one's something I'm very interested in, because I've seen where a lot of artists, as they build their business, right, they might start doing more workshops, right, of different types, different, you know, experience levels and things like that. However, when did you begin inviting other artists to teach in your studio, and how involved are you when you're bringing another artist in?
So I organized my first workshop at Ollie Fine Art Studios. I started talking about it in 2017, and it first happened in 2018. And it was with a company in California that do professional best practices for oil painters. And so they were my very first workshop to teach people just how the materials behave and proper ways to build a painting so that they will last. And then since then it's been all artists. For a while I was making sure that I had six visiting artists per year. I don't host workshops in the heat of the summer. I don't host workshops in December or January. So, you know, that kind of works out, three in the spring, three in the fall. And now I'm even cutting back further. This year I have four, and that feels much better for my own artistic practice. And you asked how involved am I in them? And that's such a broad question. I'm involved from, it's me. The Ollie Fine Art Studios is me. So I don't have an assistant who sends out the emails to students or to the instructors. When everybody's here in this space, I usually am painting beside them. I'm, you know, juggling coffee, making coffee for 15 people and painting alongside them. So, yeah. And so it makes me invested in the people that I bring. I have to be really interested in having this person come take up space and teach, and who I want to also learn from.
Yeah, I saw that you have a sculpture coming, and my brain went to like, wait, are you sculpting next to the students, or are you like more like a TA in a way, assisting, you know, the main artist, or floating about, I guess, like participating and helping out with all the things?
I try not to teach for the teachers. I would be uncomfortable if somebody was hosting a workshop that I was teaching, was starting to, you know, interpret what I was saying. So I really try not to step on the instructor's toes. But that doesn't mean that I'm not asking questions that are leading. If I see students not getting it, or the teacher is struggling to describe something, I'll try, because I can't help it. I am still a teacher. I'm really looking forward to that sculpture workshop. It's with Zoe. Shoot.
I can't think of her last name either, but it was Zoe like DeFour. A sculpture.
Zoe DeVore.
I saw that and was like, oh, maybe I'm gonna ask that for my birthday. I don't know.
Yeah, there's one spot left. You better get it soon. If not, she's from California, and she's Thai artist. So I'm really also purposefully trying to host women and artists of color as well, because there are plenty of white males doing their thing everywhere else. They don't need to do it here.
Yep. No, I absolutely love that. And you probably are familiar with my studio neighbor, Omi. So I'm definitely going to make sure she sees that if she hasn't yet.
She's signed up.
Okay, perfect. I'm so happy to hear that. Okay, another question that I have. Thank you. This has been super helpful because, again, it's interesting to see. Again, it's not every artist that will invite other artists into their space and give them the platform, the opportunity, the physical location as well. Of course, you have your own following and things like that where you're advertising this through. So it's kind of interesting, like opening that door. And it definitely resonates with us. Like anybody that's ever heard our podcast, Jackie and I always preaching community over competition. And that right there fits perfectly in. But I do want to ask you then, so earlier, kind of circling back, we had discussed how, you know, depending on the student and maybe their family situation, whether or not they would support them. And there's this idea that comes about, especially as art education, traditional art education, keeps going up in cost quite exponentially. There's this idea that keeps floating about on the internet with other instructors where they're encouraging, you know, prospective artists or those that want to pursue it seriously to sort of build their own art degree in a way, right? Not so much as just YouTube and Pinterest, but actually seek out specific workshops with folks that are specialized in their fields. And then kind of, instead of making it a general type degree, they're actually like diving straight in. Say someone wants to be a sculptor. Well, they don't have to take a pottery class, like a basic pottery class, or just black and white perspective drawing. Instead, they might just focus on just doing all their workshops around that and maybe a few other things to help tie it in. So I want to ask you, how do you perceive your workshops potentially being, you know, available or helpful for those folks that are trying to build their art degree? Like, are you specifically picking experts in their fields? And, you know, this could be a good way for those prospective art students, you know, to look into.
Yeah. And I think my own classes also feed into that quite a bit. So I do every year I teach a series, either it's a portrait series or a figure series. And it's over the course of 6 to 8 months where we start the basic fundamentals of drawing, anatomy, and then build and build and build month by month. And people can drop in and out as life happens. I know it's hard. And over the course of that time, get to be, you know, a pretty proficient, skilled figurative paint or portrait painter in oils. And I've had artists come through, young artists that come through, and I end up falling in love with them and I have to sponsor them and they don't give me a cent anymore. I just, you know, I want to foster the young artists. This information that I have gained is not mine to keep. I have to pass it on.
Yeah. And that's definitely a mindset that we share in terms of sharing forward information, sharing forward, whether it's one little technical skill, whether it's a mindset shift, because we all have those aha moments in our creative careers. As you allude to also, of course, we have this perfect timeline of I'm going to take this workshop and then this one and this one, but without factoring in any of the other life commitments, any of the other things that just pop up that we don't plan for in life. And I feel like as artists, that's part of the creative journey is reacting to the things around us.
Yeah. And going back to the workshops that you asked about too, all of the artists that I bring here have to be of a certain level just for me to be interested enough to have them in my space. So they are all very proficient. And I do know to some degree, whether they're good teachers or not either, because that's really important to me. I've had one artist, visiting artist, and I won't say any names, but I won't have them come back because they broke some dreams. I had a 14-year-old student in that particular workshop, and her dreams were broken, and that was not okay with me.
Yeah. And I think, at least as someone who did go to art school for college and was very fortunate enough to go on and get my master's, it was definitely kind of a stigma going into art school of like your freshman year, there's going to be a professor who like critiques your work in front of the entire class or like erases your drawing, tells you it's terrible. Luckily, I felt very privileged in having like very supportive teachers and great educators who were able to give constructive criticism and not shatter dreams, as you mentioned, because it is such a fine line with a degree or just teachings as art. Like it is so personal and it can be so emotional. And sometimes, as you know, as an educator, it might not be, okay, this technical skill that I am teaching them in this 3-hour workshop. So much of it is building the confidence and what their voice is. And like, yes, skills are a lifelong evolution, right? Like we all are learning them the whole time, but it's really about nurturing that creativity in others and learning along the way. But I am curious from an advice standpoint of artists who are thinking about maybe starting to host their own workshops, what advice would you have for them if maybe they don't have a traditional degree in teaching? What advice would you give to artists who are thinking about starting their own workshops?
To invite artists to be workshop teachers in their space? Is that what you mean?
Or if, let's say, an artist has a certain technique or a certain style that they want to teach to other artists.
Okay, gotcha. I would say start locally because you'll have a supportive group built into the community already, and they're more likely to be honest with you what worked, what didn't work, and give a survey, an anonymous survey at the end, so you can get that feedback to build your practice. And that also helps you like take pictures of groups working together and, you know, build the business as well. And do teach what you know really, really well too. Like, don't try to learn something just to teach. Teach what you love.
I think that's great advice. I think especially when you're thinking about, if you're primarily an artist and then thinking of teaching as a potential income stream, of course there is that benefit, but that idea of don't learn something just so that you can teach it to other people is that you really should be the expert on it, in the sense of it's something you do all the time. It's a system you have in place. It's a style or technique you have. And maybe thinking of with students, like admit if you don't know something. And I love how you mentioned also getting feedback from your students early on. If you don't know them, you can do an anonymous survey, or maybe the first round, it's other artists, friends, and they can critique your teaching style. Maybe they have a little bit tougher of a skin, as you were mentioning your example of like, you know what? Like, I know you don't mean this comment that way, but if I didn't know you,
right,
it'd come off really wrong. Or I know you thought you were doing well by helping me with this technique, but I didn't give you permission to like completely change my ceramic piece. And now I feel like it's not mine anymore. There's like moments where people may have good intentions. I feel like as a teacher, it's so important to have awareness of, and getting that feedback can be so, so important.
Yeah, that's great, Jackie. Those are great suggestions.
Absolutely. I've definitely taken advantage of the beta testers for classes before, where I'm like, just give it to me straight. How is that? Longer, shorter? More paint, less paint. Oh, yeah. It's always helpful. And also been firm on the, will you teach watercolor? Absolutely not. it's great. Not a medium I'm familiar with, sorry. But I know artists that are, which I can, going back to that, you know, community over competition. If someone says, and I do get this question, do you know anybody who does figure drawing? Well, we do. She's at Anchor Light.
Yeah.
Down the road.
Yeah.
I just stick to the abstracts. Thank you. All right. So one of the questions we like to ask everybody is, how would you define success as an artist?
This one had me stumped because I really feel every step of my career has been a win. The fact that I'm 20 years on and I'm still doing it and still excited and still challenging myself, both in the work, but also in the ambition, that's a win. You know, it's not, there's not an end goal. It's just, this is my lifestyle now. So I guess that's success.
That definitely counts as success. Everyone has such different answers, and I absolutely love that. So I know you've given a handful of pieces of advice throughout this episode already, but what is one piece of advice that you wish you had heard before you started on your creative journey?
I think it's just be true to yourself. That I'm going back to listen to your gut. Early on, literally my graduation show from college, a gallery saw my exhibition and reached out and said, if you can do 10 of these, one painting that you had in that show, then I'll give you an exhibition. And I tried and I tried and I tried, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't make 10 of the same painting. My gut was saying, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is not you. You are not this artist. You're not an illustrator. I listened to that gut and said, you know what? This isn't going to work for me. Thank you very much. So trust yourself.
And I love that you did give it a try. It wasn't a straight up no. It was like, let's give it a shot. Because obviously with artists, as they progress through their career, at first, it's good to say yes to more things and then weed out what you actually don't like. So I'm glad you did give it a try. And then Now you don't have to worry about that one. If someone just randomly hands you $100, what would you splurge on or invest in? Has to be something that brings you joy and relates to your art or business.
So I really love a beautiful new tube of lead white paint. And it costs about $100. I love natural pigments. They're out in California. It's the same company that was my first workshop that I hosted here at Alia Fine Art Studios in 2018.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that. Loyalty to a brand definitely goes a long way, especially if you're like, I tried other stuff and you keep coming back to the same one. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for today's conversation. This has been so much fun. Real quick before we go, how can listeners stay in contact with you after they listen to today's episode?
So you can follow me personally, my artwork on Instagram at Alia Painter, and then my studio at Alia Fine Art Studios. And I also have a website that may be sort of out of date. I'll work on it. And it's www.alia-fineart.com.
Website's always a work in progress, especially for artists.
It's that admin stuff.
Preach. We know. We'll definitely make sure to share all those links in the show notes. Would you mind staying with us a few extra minutes so we can discuss any advice on pursuing new artistic opportunities for the bonus segment for our podcast?
Sure. Thank you.
Excellent. So for our listeners, if you want to become a podcast supporter, head on over to levelupartist.com and you can find out how you too can support the podcast.
If you want to stay connected with us in between episodes, share your favorite parts, you can connect with us on social media. I'm at MA Art across all platforms.
And I'm at J Sanders Studio on all platforms. And if you want to stay connected with the podcast, we are at Level Up Artists on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.